Rabbi Osai. You know, I tell you that every person, every thinking person, has a topic of two or three or four that they feel passionately about. They really want to understand it, like, all the time, try to work it out. Today's shiur is one of mine. I love this topic and I hate this topic at the same time. And one of the reasons why I love it is because I think it really, this issue, touches upon everything that we do every single second of the day. And this issue is a central issue of who we decide to marry, what we decide to do, and basically, again, every step of life. If we misunderstand and we miscalculate the equation and the balance that I'm going to speak to you today about, then everything goes awry. And I would like to just, as like a warning and as a request, at first I want to say things that seem very radical and crazy. The reason why I'm going to be doing that, because we're going to be looking at this issue at first from an ontological perspective. What I mean by that is that, what is something be'etzem b'metzius? Just because something is described in a certain way b'metzius, doesn't mean you relate to it in that particular way. So at first, again, it's going to sound very extreme, and you may not like it. Give me a chance. It's going to be a two-part. We're going to continue this issue next week, but it's going to come out much less extreme than it's going to sound like at first. But in order to show you kind of like the bookends of this whole issue, we have to speak in a very extreme kind of way. So the issue that we're going to discuss today is the balance between Ruchnius and Gashmius. And it's connected to the issue that we spoke about earlier in the year about Cheshbon HaNefesh. We spoke about the fact that in order to be able to successfully lead your life in anything, you know, we spoke about Stephen Covey, one of the first steps in perfection is plan with end in mind. You have to know what is it you want. What are you trying to accomplish? What are we trying to get to? Sof ma'aseh v'nachshav v'tchila. We have to try to keep the goal in mind. So before we can speak about Ruchnius and Gashmius, we have to ask ourselves, well, what are we doing here? Again, what's the rules of the game? Now, my daughter asked me to play Sorry with her, the game Sorry the Board Game. So today, what is the point of this game? We have to get these little red things out of it, and you have to wobble around, you have to knock us off, and get back into the half. Great. So now I know the rules, now I know the fun. But if all of a sudden I think that the goal of the game is to get myself into the different color house, so that means I'm going to play the game very, very differently. So again, we have to keep in mind, what is the goal? So very much b'kitzur, the goal is for us to actualize ourselves. I think at a different point we spoke about Maslow's pyramid. You guys know about Maslow's pyramid? There's a pyramid of needs. There's some basic needs. We need air. Well, first is air. You gotta get some air, right? If you don't have air, nothing else matters. Get air, you gotta get some water, you gotta get some food. So one of the elements of the pyramid is self-actualization. We have a need to actualize ourselves. We feel that there's something about us that exists in potential. We have certain kohos, and we have to mold them and shape them and bring them out. It's a need. It's like a need for water. So we have this desire and this need to self-actualize ourselves. And the Torah says, you want to self-actualize? What does that mean? Every culture and every theory in psychology and philosophy has a different view. What does it mean to self-actualize yourself? What is the epitome? What's the spitz of a human being? Comes the Torah and says, you know, you want to be the spitz of humanity? You want to discover your true self? Your true self is the Ish Elokim. It's the divine human being. You know, the Kuzari has different madrigas of existence. The top madriga is a Novi. It's a Novi. So bottom line is, if we want to actualize ourselves, part of that equation, the equal part of that equation, is to bring out the divine element of ourselves. To be Mizdama Takudosh Baruch Hu is not just a mitzvah. It is the mitzvah. The goal is to become prophet. And again, a prophet doesn't mean you're running around telling people what to do. That's not the nekudah. The prophecy is a certain relationship with a kodesh baruch hu. That is our goal. That is a shpitz. Everything else is a sideshow. The goal is to be able to purify ourselves and gain wisdom knowledge, chokhmah, bina, v'das, to be able to tap into realms that are beyond ours. To be able to see the divine, to connect to the divine on every single step. That's our goal. And the moment that a person actualizes a goal, the person discovers that this is who he truly is. And he realizes that everything else is just dancing around this whole issue. Everything else is simply a warped manifestation of a desire to connect to Kodesh Baruch. You know, human beings are called a nefesh. Nefesh means to desire. Human beings are, if we were to describe ourselves, we would describe ourselves as wanters and desirers. Imagine for a second we would take away all your desires. You want nothing. You no longer exist. A human being is a desire. That's why David HaMelech says, "Vani tefila." I am a tefila. What does it mean I'm a tefila? The answer is tefila means you're calling out, you're desiring things. Why? Because a human being by definition is a desire. We're constantly wanting something. If a human being, by the way, let's think about it for a second. If a human being doesn't want, he can't move. In order for me to lift my finger like this, I have to want to do it. If there's no desire, then there's nothing. But ultimately, all desires come back to really, if you purify all the desires, you come back to desire to connect to a higher power. All desires that we have is a connection to a higher power. And then Piasetsna writes that human beings sometimes have you know, you're sitting around in the dorm room, you want something. Something's missing. Something's not right. So what do? You go to the fridge. You get yourself a piece of chocolate. And you know what? You feel okay. Things are okay. You get yourself a milkshake. You know, I'm not feeling right. You turn on TV. You get a book. So says we said, you've silenced it. You're right, you've silenced it, but you've missed the point. Ultimately, that desire that says, I'm missing, ultimately that desire is, I need to actualize myself. I need to connect to something higher. And all you're doing by having the piece of chocolate is just simply kind of pushing the desire away, almost like an alcoholic who has an issue, so instead of dealing with it, just takes a drink. You're right, the issue disappears. It's not that the issue has disappeared. It's just kind of been pushed out of the mind. Our goal is to actualize ourselves, to discover the true beauty of ourselves. We spoke about it in the Shir, the importance of not only seeing the importance of Kedusha, seeing the beauty of Kedusha. Kedusha is beautiful. So that's our goal. So the problem is like this. We live in a world that's Geshem, the physical world. Now, I'd like to show you something very extreme. And that is, if I were to ask you which Jewish thinker represents, epitomizes moderation, who would you say? Which Jewish thinker epitomizes the golden mean moderation? The Rambam. Right? Rambam is, you know, no extremes. Okay. I want to show you some non-extreme Rambams. On page one, the Rambam, I'm going to summarize it a little bit. The Rambam basically says in the first section that all good things come because of Ruchnius, and all terrible things come because of Gashmius. Everything bad that happens is because of Gashmius. But, says the Rambam, we have an ability for our Ruchnius, for our Seichel, to rule over our Gashmius. Then he gives a little mashal over here. In Chelek Gimel Perek Ches, listen to this incredible mashal. V'chol asher yevihu, the underlined part. V'chol asher yevihu tzarche achomer. L'lichlucha v'cherpasoa mufursemet yitzta'er amash nishkabo. Every time you have to engage in gashmius and chomerius, you should be pained by it. V'yivosh, you should be embarrassed. Whenever you take care of your physical needs, you should be embarrassed. V'chalem imash nogebo. You should stay away and should attempt not to engage in this embarrassment. Listen to this mashal, unbelievable mashal. You have an individual that the king got angry at him. Right? The king gets angry. Who knows what zevel is? Manure. The king gets angry at a guy and says, okay, your punishment is you just pile like 10 meters worth of zevel, you need to carry it from one place to another. Mimakom lamakom lavazoto, and it's there to embarrass the guy. Sheadamahu yishtadel b'chol yichalto listater be'ezah b'zayonahu. What are you going to try to do? It's embarrassing. You're going to hide. You're going to do it in the middle of the night. No one is watching. You don't want your friends to see how you're picking up zevel. Amnam, which is the next paragraph, ha'eved yismach b'zeh, if a person is an eved, a person is a low-class person, oh, gevaldik, I get to play Zevel, he's excited, great, he can make Zevel balls and toss them at people, great, everything is so interesting, that's because this is a low-level person. Finishing up, the Ram says, Shekol tzarchei achomer etzlam cherpa v'gnus nechisaron. All the physical needs are disgusting and embarrassment and nechisaron. V'etchivu behechref, you have to do them like it's, you have to do them. Incredible thing. Incredible thing. With the Rambam, that's so much into moderation. All of a sudden says, Gashmi nechomis, you should stay away, it's a terrible thing. Now, I have Mesos Yisharim over on page 2. Listen to this, Mesil Shisham, incredible. Vine, some HaKadosh Baruch Hu, person has placed man, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has placed man. L'adam b'makam sh'rabim bo ma'amarachikim aso, mimen yisbara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has put us into a world where there's all these powers that are there to push us away from Hashem. V'hem hem ha'taymuz, chomriyo, scary. Asher im yimashach acharem, you follow them. Hinei hu mitrachek v'holech mi'adam ha'metid. If you follow the taymuz, we are far away from the Tov HaAmiti, the true good. A person in this world is placed into a terrible battle. Anything that happens in this world, good or bad, they're tests. Ha'oni and so on and so forth. And the Ramchal says, a person finds himself in a battle, in front of you, in the back of you, there's battles all the time. That reminds me of that scary horror movie that I remember I used to watch as a teenager. You know, vampires versus werewolves, right? You know, the innocent little guys walking down the street, all of a sudden the sun sets, and the wolves and vampires come out. And then he returns and says, vampires, werewolves, vampires. It's a scary thing over here. Anyone read Berenstain Bear's book on strangers? Guys, you remember that book? So, this is a great thing. So what happens is, in this book, parents tell their little bear kids about how dangerous strangers are. So it shows a page in the book of what really outside looks like. There's an old lady smiling, walking. There's a squirrel jumping in, and there's a guy walking down the street. It's like a happy scene. And it shows what the kids see. They see the old lady. She's a witch, and she's planning to hurt them. And even the squirrel is giving them dirty looks. So you read this from Chal, you walk outside and you say, oh, this is a scary world. This guy's looking at me. He's a test against me. And there's trees against me. And this against me. Oh my gosh, there's, you know, no friends. There's no vampires. So you read this from Mr. Sharm, you push it, don't want to go outside. Okay? Scary stuff. Okay, it's not going to be so bad, guys. The ending is good. The guy's going to survive, the sun's going to rise, and kill the vampires, okay? So, bottom line, we said like this. You have to keep in, our goal is to become, you know, homo propheticus, just to make it forward, okay? A human problem. That's our goal. The problem is, we're in Gashmius. Gashmius, guys, stinks, okay? Gashmius stinks, and everything you think in Gashmius is good is really dangerous, horrible, terrible, scary. Okay, great. So let's run away from it. Let's have nothing to do with it. Let's give it all up. No more Gashmius. That's it. No more Gashmius, guys. We put it to a bag and throw them to the sea. There's a problem. You know what the problem is? We can't. You know why? Because we're human beings, and we have bodies. And bodies that are physical require Gashmius. We need to breathe. I just engage in Gashmius. We need to drink. We need to eat. We need to build families. We need to go to work. We need to do stuff with Gashmius. Catch 22. Gashmius is so dangerous, so bad, but we have to do it. We have to do it. Now, why would God play such a cruel joke on us? It's an incredible thing. So he wants us to, on one hand, succeed and get close to him. On the other hand, he puts us in a horror movie where everything is against us. Why not would he do such a thing? So it says on college 2, that the following yisod, and we mentioned this yisod before, and that is anything that you get for free, it's not worth very much. If I give you a gift, you don't care about it. You know, people give these large inheritances. They just waste it. They just spend it. But when you have to earn every penny, then you really appreciate it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu certainly could have put us into Gan Eden and everything would have been fine and dandy. The problem is, then we would not be able to appreciate it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us in a world where we have to earn it. And the Ramchal makes an incredible point, and that is, if a person, you know, we spoke about the mitzvah of being like the divine. You know, says Ramchal, in what way you are divine? What's the best way, though it's the greatest possible way you can become divine, and that is just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is self-made, he's a self-made millionaire. No one made him. He is perfect because he is perfect. No one gave it to him. So too, when a person earns his own perfection, in that way, we become like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an incredible thing, Rabbi Osai. By the way, in like the self-help literature, in all these self-help books, one of the big yisodos is be proactive. Be proactive means it's up to you. So sentences like, he made me angry, don't exist. There's no such thing as he made me angry. No one ever made you angry. What you're supposed to say is, I allowed him to make me angry. Or, I got angry. There's no such thing. What does it mean? There's some angry button that when you weren't looking, that I pressed it and made you angry? To be proactive means that we have the power for self-determination. The reason why I didn't get up for Shacharis is because I didn't get up for Shacharis. It's me. And the reason why I got angry wasn't because of him, it's because of me. So, Lamai Nafkamina is that I'm in control to change it. If he made me angry, I'm not in control. I'm not in control what he does. But if I allow him to make me angry, now I'm in control. This notion of self-determination, to believe that I determine myself, is a yisod in ability to grow, and says Ramchal, it is the epitome of imitati yodei, of being similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That I determine myself. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu places in the world in which we can choose who we want to be. And that allows us to make ourselves and not someone else making us. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us certain parents and certain genes. Certain things are given to us, for sure. But we can choose what we want to do with it. You know, when anyone who knows how to play cards, which I'm sure no one here knows, but if, you know, anyone who's a serious card player knows, it's not whether you always win or lose, it's how you play the hand. You know, sometimes you get a terrible hand and you play really well. And sometimes you're given a great hand and you just really waste it. So it's the question is, what do you do with the hand that's dealt to you? Some people get a great hand, they have a choice to do great things with it or not great things, and sometimes the person is dealt with not a good hand. The question is, what does he want to do with that hand? So we have been placed in a world that challenges, that tests us, because this is the greatest opportunity for us to grow. If I want to learn how to be the greatest possible soldier, I'm not going to go to the Bahamas and camp out on the beach. That's not going to make me a better soldier. I'm going to go out there, I'm going to get myself a drill sergeant, he's going to push me, I'm going to run. I'm going to put myself in an environment that's going to challenge me the most. This world on both sides is the best thing for us, because it allows us to work, to be challenged, and even when we fail, it gives us opportunities out of those failures to be able to learn something and to make our victories much greater because we fail. This world has been crafted perfectly for the task that we have been placed here to do. Perfectly. Much. There's no accidents, no mistakes over here. Everything's crafted exactly how we need it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us in this world to give us an opportunity to self-actualize, and it's a dangerous world, guys. Dangerous world. But we have to be here, and we have to engage in it. Okay, so we are in this world. It's a dangerous world. So how do we relate to it? So, I'm going to, you know, we spoke a little bit ontologically in terms of, you know, the reality of gashmius and good, bad. So let's, you know, bring it down a little bit. So since our goal is to become Naveen, and our task in this world is to become Ruchani, that means that the physical world that we live in, which is again very dangerous in many ways. Let me just make one more point, and I think it's an important point. Just practically speaking, why is gashmius so dangerous? You know, all the time you're going to gashmius, taiva, gashmius. What do these rabbis have against taiva? What do the rabbis have against gashmius? Let me tell you. When a human being is focused on one thing, it's very difficult for him to focus on something else. When somebody's really, really into one thing, imagine you're really, really enjoying a certain movie. Really, you're sitting there, wow, it's so amazing. You know, things around you are happening, you're not paying any attention. Because you're really, really into this one thing. So on a basic level, human beings have a certain amount of attention, have a certain amount of energy to be invested in the world that we live in. We can't invest in everything. Just like you can't have 100 friends. Because there's certainly an economy of friends. You can have 5 friends that you invest your time and attention with. The moment you have 20 friends, They're not, none of them are really your friends, they're just your acquaintances. So in this life, we have a certain amount of attention. So when a person gets really into his car, TV, food, that means he has much now less attention to give to something else. On a certain basic level, it's simply law of economics. If you really love one thing, you just don't have the energy to love something else. Bottom line is, Rabbi said, let's take something incredibly innocent. A person watches, you know, it's coming, guys, it's coming. LeBron, Kobe. It's going to happen, guys. It's just a matter of time. Now, you watch that LeBron and Kobe game. Nothing wrong with that. There's no concern that are going on. You watch the game. Now, it was an incredible game. I mean, it was just one of the greatest games of all time. Now, you're in chakras the next day. You're saying, Ribbon Shalom saved my life! And as you're saying the words, oh my God, did you see that move that he made? That was crazy! Inevitably, it's going to happen. It's going to happen, Rabbi Osai. And you're trying to learn something in Gemara and Tanakh and Machshava. And bottom line is, the whole day, your mind's occupied. Because you love it so much. And it's just so interesting. You just can't push it out. And the day goes by, and you kind of wake up in the night and say, whoa, what happened today? LeBron, LeBron, and LeBron. I think I opened up a safer, I think. Right? But I think an Ayin Chesem with ours is something on LeBron. I'm not sure. Ben, it's an example of something that's not bad at all. But it's a question of economics. It's a question of how much space do we have in our brain and our attention to focus on what we need to focus on. I think I told you before there was a couple who I knew. I mean, the guy was like in his mid-40s. He was a computer programmer. And I came to visit him and his family. And I was working in the shul. So the wife complains to me that he's playing a video game. Well, he's like sim games. That never end. So the man was playing 7-8 hours a day. He wasn't paying attention to the wife. He wasn't paying attention to the kids. He was playing his game. He said, oh, Marsh, can I show you? Look at my universe that I built. I said, sir, this is a computer game. It's not you didn't build anything. It's a game. It's just like that. So when you invest a lot in this video game, that means something has to, you know, fall on the side. So in that case, it was his wife and his kids. But we always have to be choosing what we want to be focusing on. When a person is engaging in taiva in an extreme kind of way, that means he simply has much less attention to focus on something else. So Torah and mitzvahs, the goal of Torah and mitzvahs is to create a certain balance between, of course, taking care of our physical needs, but at the same time, to leave us time and opportunities and focus and concentration in order to be able to zero in on what we are really trying to accomplish here. Let me summarize and I'll take the question. Then we started that with a point that we have to know our goal. If you lose sense of what we're trying to accomplish in this life goes by like this, Rabbi Osai. It's crazy. I think starting from about like 19, life zooms like crazy. I remember up to about like 18 years old, like high school, taking it easy, and the day goes by slowly, you know, you wake up in the morning, and dive in at some point, and jump into my car, and play 4 or 5 hours of ball in the summer, and go to the pool, and slowly go play some more ball, and go to the weight room, and play some more ball, and go to the days, just slowly drag by. And all of a sudden, it happened after yeshiva, I can't believe how fast it happened. Time zoomed. And the only way I realized that how fast the time goes, and my daughter was born yesterday. She's 7.5 years old. Where did the time go? It's crazy. It's crazy. And everyone I talk to, all my friends, it's incredible. Life goes by. I've spoken to older people. They say, where did it go? Life goes by very quickly. And unless you have your eye on the ball, you can totally miss the show. You totally, totally miss it. You have to be clear on the goal. The goal is, as we said, to become Yishruchani. We said that the physical world is a dangerous place and everything is there to push us aside and for us to focus on the non-important things. And we said the reason we're placed in such a world because that test allows us to fight and struggle and to earn. And we said that in order to properly relate to this world, we have to use the physical world as tools. The way Rav Dessler calls it, it's kelim. The tools in order for us to achieve our goal, which I'm going to explain a little bit more in a second.
I think we were doing before, but we only had unlimited attention. If you more than 5 years, physical attention, what you can further
not Earth Court.
Good. I'm saying like when someone says like, oh yeah, I'm playing ball let's say, so that I'm able to learn better.
Right. So that is part of what I would call means. Again, I'll speak to this about this in a second. I would say that's an example of using playing ball as a tool to further your goals of growth, which, by the way, in itself becomes a mitzvah. The question is, are you seeing a game of ball as a value unto itself? Or do you see it as a means to an end? Right? A person can appreciate and enjoy greatly a game of ball. The question is, why is he doing that? Because he sees that as a purpose of his life, to live and enjoy. Or does he see that as that I'm a human being, it's true my ikar tapas in this world is to purify myself, to become wiser, to become greater, to become kinder, to become more ethical. But I'm a human being, and therefore, I, where I'm coming from, and in terms of what my body needs, is I need to blow off some steam and play some ball. It's funny, you have two people doing the same thing, with they're really doing two completely different things. One is just the guy playing ball, the other guy is doing a little fashion. Okay? We'll speak more about this in a second. In order for us to be successful, we need to fulfill our needs on both sides. This is a crucial point. And needs, I don't mean just air, I don't mean just water, I don't mean just bread. It means even psychological needs. And we spoke about the pyramid of human needs. And the Tziv says, the Haggadah says that we remember Lachatzenu, that the Egyptians pressured us. Now what do you mean they pressured us? So I don't know what Lachatzenu means, because the Pasuk says. But the Baal HaGadah says, I'll tell you what it says, Chak. I don't know what it's either. Pressure. It says in the Tziv, they put them into crowded quarters. So when a person is in a crowded quarter, he can't think, right? But the Rousseau, like we said, human beings are animals who are least adapted to living in herds. Human beings need space. We need space. That's one of our psychological needs. You know, the Gemara says that a Talmud Chacham, he needs a mitana, a ishana, a dirana. All these things are marchiv daitun shu adam, right? These are things that are brought in a person's mind. When I'm in a space, nice space, air conditioning, the apartment looks nice, everything is organized, I'm able to think. Mitano, ishano, dirano. So we have to provide for our basic human needs. Says the Chovas Salavah said, incredibly so. Chovas Salavah says that a human being was given a desire for self-preservation. You know, fight or flight. Guy attacks me, I'm going to either punch him out, or if he's a big guy, I'm going to run away. I'm going to eat. I'm going to drink. I'm going to take care of myself. Says the Chovas HaLevavos, the problem becomes, Rabosai, when that sense of self-preservation becomes corrupted, and it becomes confused with, I desire to swallow up the world. Meaning, all of a sudden, no longer do I want to eat minimal food, I want to pig out. Now, to eat two slices, three slices of pizza is self-preservation. Almost. But, let's say, eating two pies is not self-preservation. It's self-preservation corrupted. Right? Every koach that a human being was given by a Kodesh Baruch Hu is positive. But it could be corrupted. So a human being has a desire to engage in the physical world to self-preserve oneself. Because we don't want to die. To live in this world is positive. We want to be here. You know, it's interesting. Judaism does not rush to die. It's interesting, even though it's a famous question, the Kuzari, why do Jews believe in Gan Eden so great, why don't we just don't shoot ourselves? The answer is, well, no rush. This world is a great place. Many, many opportunities. Rav Fuchs told me a very beautiful idea. You know, we know that Bilam was punished and Eov was punished. Bilam was killed right away. Jews got him off of his head. And Eov also, you know, did a mistake, which seemingly was a much smaller mistake. Eov was a tzaddik. He suffered and suffered and suffered and suffered and suffered. So why is that? The answer is to live, even with tzar, is positive. That's Jewish view. To live, life is so precious. Life gives us opportunities. We know the story of Elozar ben Dudaya. Elozar ben Dudaya was a big rusher. Guys, he did everything he did. There wasn't one of there he didn't do. So one day, Gemara says he slept with every zona, every single one. And one day there was found there's one zona. Great, and he grabs the money and he runs over to this zona, and the zona just kind of like totally innocently says, by the way, everyone can do tshuva except for you, which he took to be a simon min hashamayim, it wasn't just, you know, some pillow talk, but it was so, it was a simna shemayim that this was really so. So he tried, he davened that the mountains should ask for him, and the sea and the earth should daven for him, and he realized that the only way he could save himself was he would daven for himself. And he davened so hard, says the Gemara, that he passed away. And the Basco came out and said, Rabbi, Rebbe, you imagine he did. Rebbe's like a Tana, he makes like a Tana. Rebbe Elozer ben Dardai is welcome to Olam Haba. And Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, cried, and he said, look at this guy. He was Kone Alamo B'Sha'achas. In a split second, a guy completely turned himself around. So why did he cry? And the answer is very, very simple, Rebbe Elozer. Rebbe realized the power of the moment. A person can change his life in a split second. So therefore, Judaism views time and life in a very, very special way. So, the Chovas HaLevavos has this notion that we have the desire to live and to preserve ourselves, which is positive, but unfortunately can become corrupted. And therefore, sometimes, Rav Osai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away our gashmas. I'll give you a mushroom. There's a beautiful mushroom. There was once a painter, and the painter had years. Anyone have artists today? No artists. The painter had years of lack of motivation. It wasn't motivated. Every painting he painted was terrible. One day, he takes his apprentice and goes to a beautiful view. There's a waterfall, a mountain, stunning. Painting. Yes. He gets an inspiration. Paint. Look at the painting. Stunning. He's never painted anything like it before in his life. But as you know, in order to see if the painting goes really good, he needs to get the perspective on it. So he takes a step back. Awesome. Another step. Now, the apprentice is noticing, as this artist is moving backwards, there's a cliff. And he is a few steps away from falling off the cliff. So the apprentice, you know, cups his hand and he yells out, Stop! You're about to fall off the cliff! The problem is there's a waterfall, and the water is so loud that the master painter doesn't hear. And he's walking back and back and back. And the apprentice doesn't know what to do. He does the only thing he can think of. He takes a rock, smash it. Master painter, you crazy! He runs over about to kill this guy. And the apprentice says, look what you're about to fall down. So I had to destroy this, otherwise you would have collapsed. So sometimes a human being relates to gashmias in an unhealthy way. He gets so stuck in gashmias that it becomes dangerous. And you know, it's like an alcoholic. Alcohol per se is not a bad thing. In the midst of alcohol, there are very good things you can do with it, but at some point you develop an unhealthy relationship with it, and it begins to destroy your life. You know what the answer is? An incredible thing. I knew some guy. And notice, he never stayed for Kiddush after Shul. Never. So, somewhere like, what's the chat? Why don't you ever stay for Kiddush? Because Kiddush is fun, you know? Get to hang out, and get to Shul, it's a great social fun. Why? He said, I used to be an alcoholic. Whenever I see a bottle of Jack Daniels, I just see the, you know, the logo. I need it. I can't even look at it. So he has to stay away very, very far. Dangerous for him. So, sometimes what Kushboku does is that he smashes our gashmias, breaks it into pieces. And when there's no gashmias, when there's no more bottom, now we have a chance to survive. By the way, that's how Kushboku punished sometimes. You know, we were into Avodah Zarah, and we were into all kinds of Averis, and we were using our money improperly. What does Kushboku do? He says, out of the pool, everybody out, let's go. Out of Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Why? Because when we have Eretz Yisrael, we have gashmias. Rav Kook has a beautiful piece about this. We have gashmias. We have land. We have fields. We have an economy. We have an army. We have a goof. That goof corrupted us. And therefore, if we would have continued, we would have become alcoholics. We would have been gashmias alcoholics. So what does a kosher bochur do? He smashes. The balance between Ruchnius and Gashmius, Rav Osai, is a very, very, very fine one. If you take too little, you die. I'll give you a story. My parents had a girl over for Shabbos. 2 years ago. A girl came from a Haredi family from Big Rock. Totally not from. Totally not from. Why? The answer is she was one of 12, whatever. And her father wouldn't call. And she didn't know where the next piece of bread would come from. She hated that. And she had no picture of being religious in any other way. She thought being religious basically means you don't have to be bread. And she completely threw everything out. You sometimes, you don't, when you don't give enough in gashmius, you lose the ruchnius. On the other hand, how many guys do I know? 15, 16 years old, the parents give them a credit card with a $10,000 limit. The kid gets lost. Other extreme. Too much this way, danger. Too little this way. I always thought, whenever I heard of the stories of these guys giving these $10,000 cards and just, you know, going to town, it reminds me of Gemara Maseches Brachos. Gemara Maseches Brachos says the following. There was once a dad, an apparently irresponsible one. He takes his teenage son, says, son, here, let me wash you up, washes him up, dresses him. Nice clothing. Take some cologne. Kids. Looking nice, smelling nice. Takes a bunch of money into a pouch, puts it around his neck. Takes him in and says, come son, let me take you. Take him down to the register, right? And he takes him right to the door, sits him right down, says, see you later, son. So he comes back later, and the son obviously did what, you know, the son does in that situation. And the father says, yelling at him and screaming at him, how dare you do this? And the son is like, hey, come on, you set me up. Okay. So that's sometimes, you know, a 16-year-old kid with a $10,000 credit card is, got set up. Rabbi Sofa Lanter says, the balance between Ruchnis and Gashmis is like a bird in your hand. If you squeeze it too hard, you kill the bird. If you don't squeeze it hard enough, the bird flies away. You've got to squeeze it just right. Too much Gashmis, death. Too little Gashmis, death. It's this incredibly complicated balance of taking enough that you're well, but not taking too much. And as we'll speak about the next year, this balance is completely different for every different person. What for one person is extreme gashmius, for another person is the minimum. And everyone has to strike that balance. The Rishonim, Huzuri, Chavos HaLevavos, Sefer Yikarim, and more than Ruchim, a big theme in the Rishonim, says that a great part of the Torah, a major element of the Torah, is to help us strike the balance. Help us strike a balance. Not too much, not too little. So let's summarize and we'll end here and we'll continue next time. We said that we have to keep our goal in mind. What are we trying to accomplish? We said that Gashmius unto itself contains a tremendous amount of dangers, but at the same time, we were placed in Gashmius to be able for us to grow, to be challenged. And we have to use Gashmius as a tool to further our goal. It's a tool. It cannot be something unto itself. And again, we'll speak about the practical details later on. And we spoke about the fact that sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a chesed, takes away some of the gashmius in order for us, in a situation where it's dangerous for us. And again, we have to be able to find that balance. Again, think about that mushroom of the bird. I'll tell you another mushroom in a second, which I'll repeat next time. Rabbi Sofa had two mushrooms for gashmius. One is a bird. Again, if you squeeze it too hard, you kill it. If you don't squeeze it enough, it flies away. The other marshal, he said, Gashmius is like zero. Gashmius is like zero. By itself, zero is nothing. When you put it next to something of substance, it multiplies the value. How does that? Imagine you have one. One is not very much. You put a zero next to it, it's 10 times more. Right? It's incredible. To put another zero, it's 100 times more. Gashmius has the power to take something of content and make it more powerful. Money, unto itself, what's money? Now those say money, unto itself is nothing. But you take money, and you take a great idea, a lofty idea, a holy idea, you put that together with money, you know what you can do with it? It's an incredible thing. You know, somebody wants to open up a yeshiva. Without money, very hard. Very, very hard. All of a sudden, put money and idea together, you can do incredible things that you can't do by just with money, you can't do just with an idea. When you take something of substance and you put money next to it, it becomes a very, very powerful combination. There's a guy who lives in Tel Aviv. I read this somewhere. He's not a film person at all, but he gives a tremendous amount of money to yeshivas and other Torah causes. So they asked him, like, why do you do that? So he said, I was a bachur in yeshiva when I was a kid. And I was going up to Derek, I was not interested in Yahadis in any way whatsoever. So he thought it's like the last saving, you know, last attempt to save me. They put me into the house of the Chazon Ish. I lived in the house of the Chazon Ish. So they thought maybe the Chazon Ish would save me. And as you can tell, not very much rubbed off, the Chazon Ish did not save me. But there's one thing I learned in the house of the Chazon Ish, and that is money has no value except for the goodness that you can do with it. So does Gashmius have valid answers? Yes and no. Unto itself, nothing. But when you combine it, Gashmius, when you take health, what's health unto itself? What's a person? A person lives 60, 70, 80 years in the grand scheme of things, in the history of mankind. Speck, he'll be no one will remember 99.9% of us who live in this world. Unless you're Napoleon or you're, the Rebel Yashim, no one will remember us. I mean, health and existence unto itself is not very much. But the moment you put health next to something of real value that you can impact the world in a real, real way, we spoke in the beginning of the year, how every human being has the ability to impact the world in such an incredible way. You put those two things together, and all of a sudden, you have a powerful combination. So what I'd like to do next time, I'd like to speak out practically speaking. What is Hashkafas HaYahadus on how we relate to Gashmius, like a very, very practical way? What does that mean? What is the whole notion of Istapkus B'Muad, the whole notion that you should live with a minimal? What does that mean? Does that mean we should all go back to caves and dirt floors and eating dry bagels? I mean, is that going on? Or no? And if it is, so how do we explain all the Tanaim and Amoraim and Gedol Yisroel, who happen to be very rich? He's certainly rich. How do you explain all Rebbe? We know Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, was incredibly wealthy. He was, the Gemara just says that foods that no one had, he had 365 days a year. Rebbe was very wealthy. And we know many Gedol Yisroel are very rich. How do you explain that? Isn't having too much Gashmius a bad thing? So we'll speak about that. And I think it's very important in the Kuda because, again, all decisions, which community you live in, and who you marry, and Amamish, every single step, which profession you choose, has to take into a cheshbon. How do you balance the goal of a Jew to achieve maximum ruchnius and at the same time to maintain the Gashmius? So Bez Hashem, deal with that next time. Thank you.